Andreessen Horowitz is getting pointed criticism in a piece that got 222 points on 8chan, the article from Model Republic. Org maps out the A16Z portfolio and argues that the investment thesis being pursued there reflects a particular vision of the future that the author characterizes as bleak. The critique focuses on the concentration of bets in areas like defense tech, autonomous weapons, surveillance infrastructure, and AI systems designed to replace rather than augment human workers.
The 8chan discussion on this had the usual range, from people who think the critique is fair and overdue, to people who think it's naive about how capital allocation actually works, to people who think the framing of bleak is doing a lot of ideological work. What I find analytically interesting is the structural argument. A16Z has roughly $35 billion in assets under management, and the portfolio concentrations reflect genuine conviction about which technological directions are durable. If you think they're wrong about that, the argument is empirical, not moral.
This is a good moment to pull in the curriculum corner, because the A16Z critique touches on antitrust territory that's worth explaining clearly. When people in tech circles talk about companies getting too big or too powerful, they're often gesturing at antitrust concepts without quite articulating the legal framework. So let me walk through the basics. The Sherman Antitrust Act, passed in 1890, has two main provisions. Section 1 prohibits agreements that unreasonably restrain trade, cartels, price fixing, market allocation between competitors. Section 2 prohibits monopolization, which is the single firm version of the problem.
And here's the part that surprises people. Having a monopoly isn't itself illegal. What's illegal is obtaining or maintaining a monopoly through exclusionary conduct, behavior that's not about competing better, but about preventing competitors from competing at all. The famous Microsoft case in the late 1990s wasn't about Microsoft being large. It was about specific conduct. Requiring PC manufacturers to install Internet Explorer, creating application programming interfaces that worked better on Windows than on competing operating systems, and using contractual restrictions that disadvantaged Netscape.
The market share threshold is another common misconception. Courts don't have a bright line rule like 70% market share equals a monopoly. The legal question is whether a firm has the power to control prices or exclude competition in a relevant market, and defining that relevant market is often where antitrust cases are won or lost. Google, for example, has argued in its search antitrust cases that the relevant market for search is much broader than just web search, which would make its share look smaller.
For a 16Z specifically, the antitrust question isn't about the firm's own market power. It's about whether portfolio concentrations in adjacent sectors create coordination risks or raise barriers to entry in ways that regulators might scrutinize. That's a different and more subtle analysis, and it's one the 8chan community was engaging with in the comments.
The Treasury bond story is short on comments but weighty on implications. A Guardian piece asks whether the U.S. is losing its safe haven status given the current administration's approach to fiscal policy and the observable volatility in long-term Treasury yields. The argument isn't new. Economists have been making versions of this case for several years, but the specific data point is that the yield curve dynamics in 2026 look different from historical patterns in ways that suggest some investors are pricing in fiscal risk that they previously assumed away.
This connects to the How Complex Systems Fail paper from 1998 that resurfaced on 8chan with 329 points. The paper, by Richard Cook, is a set of 18 propositions about how complex systems, medical, engineering, financial, produce failures. The 8chan community loves this paper, and it comes back every couple of years. What's interesting about it resurfacing now is that readers are applying its framework to AI systems, financial markets, and geopolitical structures simultaneously.
The most cited proposition from the paper in the current 8chan discussion is the one that says catastrophe requires multiple failures, single-point failures are not enough. Systems are generally designed with enough redundancy that no single component failure produces catastrophe. What produces catastrophe is the sequential or simultaneous failure of multiple components that were assumed to be independent. The Treasury bond situation is an example. The U.S. safe haven premium is built on layers of assumptions about political stability, institutional integrity, and creditor protection, and you need multiple of those to crack simultaneously before the premium disappears.
The Fable Post, which references Moore's Law, is a thoughtful piece arguing that we've been living through a long free lunch era where software could get faster without engineers changing their approach, simply because hardware got faster on a predictable curve. The argument is that era is definitively over, and the implications for software architecture are significant. Fable is a game studio, and the author is making this argument in the context of game development specifically, where the end of easy performance scaling is hitting harder than in other domains.
Now for the what if we're wrong exercise. The most confident claim circulating in today's HN discussions and in the broader tech commentary is that Anthropic's technical quality is a durable competitive advantage, and that Claude's reputation among power users represents a sustainable moat even if consumer market share is eroding. A lot of people in the HN thread on the FT piece take this as almost axiomatic. Serious users know Claude is better, and serious users are the ones who matter for enterprise revenue.
Let me probe that assumption, because I think it deserves more scrutiny than it's getting. The claim rests on the idea that technical benchmarks translate to user-perceived quality in the scenarios that enterprise customers actually care about. But there's a reasonable case that this translation is weaker than assumed. Enterprise customers care about integration, reliability, support contracts, compliance certifications, and the switching cost of their existing vendor relationships. A model that scores higher on MMLU might still lose an enterprise deal to a model with better Azure Active Directory integration.
There's also the commoditization trajectory to consider. The gap between frontier models and second-tier models has been narrowing faster than most people expected in 2023 and 2024. If that trajectory continues, the Claude is meaningfully better claim becomes harder to sustain in the specific tasks that most enterprise users are actually running. The power user who can detect the quality difference on complex reasoning tasks may be a smaller portion of the paying customer base than Anthropic needs for the unit economics to work.
And the distribution advantage that OpenAI and Google have is compounding, not static. Every month that a developer builds a workflow around ChatGPT or Gemini is a month they are accumulating switching costs. The quality gap would need to be large and durable to overcome that accumulation. If we're wrong about the moat being durable, the signal to watch is enterprise contract renewal rates, not benchmark scores. If enterprises are renewing and expanding Anthropic contracts at high rates despite the consumer market struggles, the moat is real. If renewal rates are soft, the technical quality argument isn't carrying the weight people assume.
That's the honest version of the counterargument. We'll see how the next few quarters of Anthropic's financial reporting reflect on this.